Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Thursday, February 11th. We have several items on our agenda today, and I believe all the members who we expected are present. Would you please call the roll?
Representative Hernandez?
Absent.
Representative Levy?
Here by video.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith?
Representative Smith is here by video in the beautiful town of Hepburn, Oregon.
Vice Chair Pham?
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke?
Reschke is present by video.
And Madam Chair Nathanson?
Present by video. And Representative Smith, you may have just set set a new challenge for us in our opening.
I'm sorry. I haven't been 2 weeks, and so it feels wonderful to be back in Eastern Oregon and be at home, Madam Chair.
Good for you. Thank you for the role. I'm opening. We have three bills. I'm going to be opening a public hearing simultaneously on two bills, so don't be surprised if I leave out a bill number. I will be opening a separate public hearing on the third bill. But two of them are so closely related and similar that it will be more efficient to open that hearing, both of those hearings simultaneously. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2457 and a public hearing on House Bill 2577. Mr. Alanak.
Sorry about that. I lost my mouse. These two bills are reconnect bills. And Kyle Easton has some summary information, is going to walk you through the contents of the bills and the main difference.
Okay, good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And yeah, House Bill 2457 and House Bill 2577 are very much in common with one difference, which I'll get to in just a moment. But these two bills represent the Reconnect bill that the committee has heard about over the last couple weeks from testimony from the CPAs and the background on Oregon's connection to federal Internal Revenue Code. But so the bill in front of you, starting with House Bill 2457 first, and I should mention in the meeting materials under both of these bills is a section by section description of the bills. And that's because the bill itself is that annual Reconnect bill, which again, as a quick refresher, Oregon has kind of two ways in which Oregon's connected to the federal tax code. The first is what we call the, or it gets referred to as the rolling reconnect, and that's the connection to the federal definition of taxable income. So that happens automatically under current law, where Oregon constantly has that tie to the definition of federal taxable income. So any change made at the federal level that affects taxable income, that gets incorporated automatically here in Oregon. So that's our rolling reconnect. And then everything that's not related to that rolling reconnect is considered a point in time connection. And that's what the bulk of House Bill 2457 is about, is all these point in time connections to the Internal Revenue Code. So peppered throughout the bill is a whole bunch of date changes. In often cases, it's gonna be updating that December 31st date of say 2018 to, in this case, it'd be December 31st, 2020. So that's updating our point in time connection throughout a number of statutes. And this bill touches on, there's even some property tax connections in here as well, in many cases relating to the Internal Revenue Code definition for nonprofits. So we have all these different,
Mr. Easton, excuse me, I'm gonna interrupt for a moment. Just to make sure that your comments continue uninterrupted, except for my interruption, of course, I noticed that a few people who are in the hearing room with us here are not muted. Would everyone who's not speaking, please mute, turn off your camera and turn off your microphone until it's time to speak. That will make sure that no extraneous noise inadvertently gets caught up. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. So yes, so most of the contents you have in this bill are related to those point in time connections, and that is described in the section by section contents. And again, this is the similar bill that the committee has seen in past years. One of the differences, of course, in this case is the update of these point in time connections is really a 2-year update, in that there wasn't an update most recently in tax year 2020. So that's why you're seeing, in most cases, the date would be going from December 31st, 2018 to December 31st, 2020. And that's just because we didn't have that update bill in the most recent short session. So House Bill 2457 is kind of that standard point in time connection update. 2577, by contrast, has all the same point in time connection changes. The difference with 2577 from 2457 is 2577 would eliminate that rolling reconnect. So instead of Oregon automatically connecting to the federal definition of taxable income, Oregon would be connected at a point in time. So it would take a change in Oregon statute to then catch up, if you will, to any federal changes made since the last time Oregon was connected in a point in time. And really, the committee heard a little bit about this and some of the background on connection point, connection time, and how that works. But really, it changes, in some cases, perhaps the discussion when there are changes at the federal level, and then Oregon's deciding, well, does Oregon want to move that connection to the definition of taxable income forward 1 year? That's a point in time connection rather than in a rolling reconnect. The question also often comes up as, does Oregon want to disconnect from any provisions following changes made at the federal level? But again, that's the general background on these two bills. And I'll go ahead and pause there if there's any questions.
I don't see any hands up yet. Am I missing anything? I think it was really good that we have had some prior briefing on this. Thank you. Representative Reschke.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. Kyle, just so I'm absolutely crystal clear, it would be a failure to pass both of these bills. Is that correct? If we passed 2457 and 2577, this is like a light switch. We either do the rolling reconnect or we do the static, and we get rid of the rolling reconnect, and then everything's a point in time connection.
Yes, Representative Reschke, I think you would create a conflict by passing both.
Yep.
Certainly, okay. Yeah.
All right, thank you.
I think you can go ahead.
Okay, Madam Chair, that was all that I had in terms of background for these. If there were specific questions, happy to go into more detail, but with kind of the stage that's been set over the last few committee discussions, I was gonna leave it there, but I'm happy to go into more detail if requested.
I'm going to ask a question for either you or Mr. Alanak. If there's a static connection, you connect at a specific point in time. How have other legislatures, Oregon legislative assemblies, dealt with choosing at what point in time is it a good thing? You know, do you connect to a date this year, a date a year ago? How do you do that?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think in the recent history, Oregon has had this rolling reconnect. I believe it's since 2011. Prior to that, there was differences made, I suppose, where either policy choice was made. And Chris may have more recollection on this one. I think we used to have a chart on this, on where the legislature was in years past.
By convention, we paused. Generally, since the mid-90s, we've been on a rolling reconnect. We had a couple of pauses there in 04, 05, and then 09, 10, where we went to a static reconnect. By convention, those reconnect dates are December 31st of the prior year. The only requirement is that it has to be in a year past. It has to be a date in the past. There was one time where we had the date of January 3rd or January 4th because the Congress had enacted something like on January 2nd that the legislature wanted to include. And the December 31st is kind of, it's the end of the tax year for calendar year filers.
That's very helpful. Thank you. Representative Reschke and then Rep. Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question quickly for you. Is anybody signed up to testify, or are we just asking questions of our LRO right now?
I am not aware of anyone having signed up to testify as of the last time we looked. Mr. Right, Allen, was anyone else signed up at the last minute right before the deadline?
No.
Thank you.
Okay, may I ask a question of LRO
sure.
then? Thank
sure.
you. So Chris and Kaya, let's see here. So that I understand this, the Rolling Reconnect has the advantage of if Congress were to act, say, in September 2021 or late March of 2022, kind of a worst case scenario, we would have to wait till the next time the Oregon legislature meets to statically reconnect to things that we wanted to do that were changed by Congress. Is that correct? Or if there were a special session, I guess, would be another option.
Yes, Representative Reschke, that's correct.
Okay, and then California, I believe, is just the opposite of us in the sense that they have a static reconnect, not a rolling reconnect. I think that's right, but I also know that they are a full-time legislature, so if Congress were to act in inconvenient times of the year, it isn't inconvenient for them because they're meeting, so. I know that's something that's been brought up in the past.
Yes, Representative Reschke, I think that's correct. And that's, I've definitely seen from just news articles and stuff of California having to adjust or contemplating adjusting their point in time connection or just incorporating certain changes at the federal level. And I know this conversation came up more in years past as well here in Oregon, before the onset of the annual sessions as well, when there was more of that 2 years could pass between something that could happen at the federal level before Oregon had a chance to really adopt those changes if Oregon chose to.
Thank you, Kyle and Chris, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Rep. Smith, did you have something also?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I was gonna add a little bit of historical perspective, but I think our talented staff members answered. The one thing I would point out is this is an ever-evolving conversation depending upon the administration, depending upon Congress, depending upon the legislature. And so I remember 20 years ago having this conversation and how this is going to play out. And so I just think it's a natural part of the Revenue Committee.
Thank you. There is no public testimony for either bill, House Bill 2457 or 2577. Mr. Allenack, is there any other business before I close the public hearing on these two bills?
No, Madam Chair. I think you've gone through the items related to those two bills.
Okay. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2457, 2577. This is a reminder to anyone who's listening, if you have testimony that you would like to submit for the committee to consider, you have up to 24 hours from the time that we started our meeting today. You have up to 24 hours to submit any written testimony to become part of the record. That would be appropriate for 2457, 2577, or the next bill we're getting ready to hear. At this time, I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2839. Mr. Allenack.
Go ahead. Yeah, Kyle's going to, he has a description of this. Yeah.
Good.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Yes, 2839, this really does build on the discussion just from the previous two bills and relating to connection. But 2839 is a bill that would disconnect largely from three provisions of the Federal CARES Act. So the CARES Act was passed last year in the spring, and that was an act at the federal level that then provisions of that act got incorporated here in Oregon through our connection, our automatic connection to the definition of taxable income. So what House Bill 2839 is doing is effectively it's disconnecting Oregon from three of those provisions. And the way Oregon generally will do this or achieves this disconnection is through an addition, is the way it's written in the statute or in the bill in front of you, is Oregon's requiring an addition from, say, a change made at the federal level. So that add back is really how Oregon effectively disconnects. But so the three provisions, I can just go over them briefly to kind of set the stage for the discussion here. The first one has to do, and I should say these changes made at the federal level in the CARES Act, in ways that we've described this in front of the committee during the interim, was talking about these changes at the federal level in some ways you could view as possibly trying to increase cash flow to businesses or monetize tax benefits more quickly for a taxpayer, even though it may balance out over in the long run. So there could be a tax benefit. I'll get into the specifics here, and that'll probably make more sense. But in some ways, that was probably the underlying policy purpose, if you will, for the changes made at the federal level, were to try to increase some of that cash flow potentially for certain taxpayers. But so the first policy in 2839 has to do with a business interest deduction. And there's three policies in the bill altogether. And this first one, the business interest deduction, does affect both personal income taxpayers and potentially corporate taxpayers as well, C-Corps, where the following two provisions will only be on the personal income tax side. But so for these business entity types, both C-Corps or potentially the pass-throughs, there is a business interest limitation that's in place right now related to a business entity's adjusted taxable income. So before the CARES Act, a business could deduct no more than 30% of their adjusted taxable income, their ATI. And the CARES Act increased that 30% to 50%. And the benefit there to the taxpayer is they can now deduct as a business expense a greater amount of an interest expense. So by deducting more, that has the potential to reduce their taxable income and reduce their taxation in the near term. So it kind of gives that monetary benefit to the taxpayer in the near term. However, these things can balance out over the long term. And that's part of it is any interest that's above that limit, whether it's 30% or 50%, just gets carried forward to a following tax year. So even under current law, it doesn't go away, but what it does is really shift the timing of how quickly a business can use this business interest deduction. So it's increasing that from 30% up to 50%. So it gives a little more benefit to the business in the initial years. And this is for tax years 2019 and 2020. So it's a temporary two-year change. So what Oregon would be doing in 2839 is requiring any business that takes advantage of that, let's say they're deducting 40%, that's 10% more than the 30%, Oregon would require an add back of whatever that amount of that additional 10% in interest deduction would be. So Oregon would require that add back. Now the taxpayer still gets that benefit at the federal level, but they wouldn't get it at the Oregon taxation level. So that's key to remember as well. And Madam Chair, I'm happy to go through all three, or would you rather I pause after each one for questions on individual policies?
Let's make sure, thank you for the pause. Let's make sure everyone was all right with this business interest limitation element before we move to the next one. Any questions? Rep. Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Kyle, are you going to present any data that we have regarding the impacted taxpayers at the end of all three of these? Or do we have any data specific to each of the three in terms of who might take this benefit or who might be correspondingly not allowed to take it if we make this change?
Yeah, Representative Marsh, we don't have anything right now in the meeting materials. I know there was some information provided back in December. Part of the difference, I guess, from what was provided in December to today is the timing of a revenue impact. In some cases, these impacts for all three provisions can balance out over time potentially, but also the information that has been provided previously was related to a disconnect that would have possibly occurred in like a special session. So now that we moved into 2021, the timing of a potential impact changes a little bit of when it actually becomes effective. And then the changes here in these three provisions are really, at this time, would be retroactive. So for tax year 2020, it could be possible to get out in front of the tax year 2020 returns, depending upon when the law change was made, and then any instructions that could go out. But in many cases, these could possibly require taxpayers to amend, say, a tax return from 2018 or 2019. And because of that, it makes it a little difficult in the timing of the impacts. They've certainly changed from, I guess, the information that was shared back in December. But I can go into, I still have some details. It's not in the meeting materials. We could add this after the meeting, of the number of taxpayers that we think could potentially be affected by doing a disconnect in the 2020 to 2039.
Thank you, Kyle. I think we definitely want to see that data.
Representative Smith. Representative Smith.
I'm learning. Thank you, Chair Nathanson. So do we know who the advocates are behind these three provisions that are looking to disconnect? And do we know what the objective is so we can understand the policy decision behind that suggestion, these suggestions?
We have a number of people signed up to testify, both for and against. So we'll be hearing from them shortly.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm.
Kyle, let's move to the next provision. Second of three.
Okay, Madam Chair. So provision number two, and the next two will be relating to the personal income taxpayers. So these will be pass-through businesses that are going to be affected. The first has to do with net operating losses. So just very quick refresher on net operating losses. When a business can pass through either income or loss, so if a business passes through a loss, that gets passed through the individual taxpayer, and there's the potential that that loss could offset other income the taxpayer may have. Or if the taxpayer doesn't have any non-business income, rather than you can't reduce your taxable income below zero, so instead you get what's considered a net operating loss. So that net operating loss is basically the business loss that you're unable to use in the current tax year that you can then use in another tax year. So if you have a loss in, let's say, tax year 2019, you're unable to use that full amount of the loss in tax year 2019, you could then carry that loss forward and use it maybe tax year 2020, 2021, 2022. So again, you don't lose that loss or the value of that loss from a tax point of view. A taxpayer can use it in a later year, but that's the basis for a net operating loss. What the CARES Act did was it changed kind of how these net operating losses or when they could be used. So for three tax years in which these net operating losses originate, tax years 18, 19, and 20, if a taxpayer has one of these, let's use 2019 as the example, a taxpayer has a net operating loss in tax year 2019, before the CARES Act, the taxpayer could only carry that forward to later tax years, whether it's 2020, 2021, 2022, what have you. They can carry it forward. What the CARES Act did is said, well, rather than just only being able to carry that forward, you're allowed to carry that back to previous tax years up to 5 years. And the key point there is, if you have a loss in 2019, you're unable to use it. If you carry it forward, you have to wait at least a year before you can carry it forward and use it in a later tax year. If I'm allowed to carry it back, as soon as I have that loss, I can then amend a previous year's tax return and use that loss in a previous year, so long as I have sufficient income to offset in that previous tax year. So again, this doesn't really change necessarily the overall impact, but it does change the timing of it. So rather than a taxpayer waiting to use it in a later year, they can amend and take it right away. And that would give them that would monetize that tax loss, if you will, sooner for the taxpayer, but then of course they won't be using it in a later year. So from a revenue standpoint, it's perhaps a loss in revenue for the state in the near term, and then an increase in those later years when it would have been used, but instead it got carried back.
Representative Marsh, and then Reschke will be after that.
Chair Nathanson, that is just bad hand management on my part.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Kyle, I'm going to summarize your description in two words, and that's cash flow. So is this a way that a business can access needed cash to stay solvent by going back rather than having to wait, carry that net operating loss forward?
Yes, Representative Reschke, I think that's the key there from the taxpayer perspective is that's what I meant by monetizing the loss, if you will, right away from through the tax system, yes.
Okay, thank you. And also just to follow up and piggyback on what Representative Marsh asked about the business interest deduction limitation is, I think in the December 10th document that I got, there was a estimate of 2,700 businesses going to use this, but if we have an updated number, just like the other one, how many businesses will be using these provisions, or we estimate they would use these provisions, would be helpful.
I'm going to make a comment now. Kyle, please correct this if I'm not saying it right. I'm trying to paraphrase. On the issue of timing, which Representative Reschke was also talking about, cash flow, on the issue of timing, cash flow in Rep. Reschke's remarks were related to the business or an entity. If we think about cash flow but related to revenue to the state, if the timing is, for example, well, it would have been taken as a loss, Oregon would have experienced this in its revenue, either in one year or another year or another year. It's going to happen at some point. It's just a question of which year we see it impacting Oregon's revenue. Can you comment, though, on the value of money? For example, if it would have been, if we would have seen it reflected in revenue this year versus we would see it reflected in revenue 2 years from now, how are we to interpret the difference in the impact just because the value of money over time?
Yes, Madam Chair, there is no adjustment built in for that time value money. That's a very good point where obviously from whether it's the taxpayer or the state perspective, I suppose, money today is generally going to be worth more than money later. So if I'm a taxpayer and let's say I can't use a loss for 3 years, yeah, there's the time value money of not having that. But then it's also, I guess, there's even that opportunity cost of what could you have done with it had you have it, and then you have to wait 3 years instead. And of course, that would work. It's almost a reciprocal way of working for the state as well, where the state would say, well, okay, the state, by disconnecting, maybe affects revenue in the near term, and with then a loss in the later years as the taxpayers are using it in a later year. So yes, there's kind of two sides of this coin, depending on which perspective you're using. And I guess my example has been from the taxpayer one, but certainly the other way is spot on as well, yes.
Yeah, yes, thank you. It looks like we're ready to move on to the next piece.
Okay, so the third provision is referred to as the business loss limitation. And this has to do with a taxpayer that has both business loss, so rather than having business income, they have a business loss being passed through to them, but they also have non-business income in which to balance those two out in a way. So if a taxpayer has a business loss of, say, $200,000 and they have $200,000 in wage income, those can balance off in the same tax year to basically make the taxpayer have zero income. So that's kind of the benefit of offsetting the other types of income, the non-business income. What the business loss limitation, this was put in place by the Tax Cut and Jobs Act at the federal level, did was it put a limitation on how much of those business losses you could use to offset your non-business income. So the limits in this case were either $250,000 for a single filer or $500,000 for a joint. So using the joint taxpayer example, let's say a joint taxpayer has $600,000 in business loss, and they have, let's say, $1 million in non-business income. So normally that $600,000 in loss could offset $600,000 in non-business income. The business loss limitation that was put in place in the Tax Cut and Jobs Act limited that to $500,000. So the taxpayer could basically only use $500,000 of that business loss in that current tax year, with the remaining $100,000 of loss being converted into a net operating loss. So then they would carry it forward, was the general framework before the CARES Act. Now what the CARES Act did, of course, it adjusted the net operating losses, which we just discussed, but the CARES Act also for tax years 18, 19, and 20 got rid of these two, the business loss limitation, that limitation of $250,000 or $500,000. And these limits are indexed to inflation, but it removed these limits. So the benefit, I guess, and I'll use the taxpayer example here because it's easier to understand why the CARES Act was passed in the first place, I suppose, but at least this provision, is a taxpayer that has that large amount of business loss, that amount over that $500,000, they can use that loss immediately in the tax year to offset non-business income. So again, it's a way of monetizing, if you will, that business loss right away in that same tax year for the taxpayer. So it gives them the benefit of that loss from a tax perspective right away, rather than having to carry that forward as a net operating loss. Now, just adding an additional wrinkle, I guess, on this one is, because the CARES Act made changes to the net operating losses, if you look at this business loss limitation in terms of a Oregon disconnecting from just the business loss limitation without adjusting the net operating loss could leave a taxpayer where they have the new business loss limitation in place, they create the NOL, but if I, as a taxpayer, can still carry that back, now all I have to do is just amend a past year tax return and I can potentially get the benefit from this or work around the business loss limitation in a way. And that's where I think in past discussions hit on, for the business loss limitation at least, you wouldn't, if you disconnect it from just the business loss limitation, you'd also want to make sure you disconnect, at least for those same taxpayers, the ability for them to carry it back. Otherwise, you may not actually experience from an increase in revenue in the near term for Oregon, because the taxpayer would then simply just carry it back where they could. So there's a bit of complexity there. Probably the takeaway on that one is just viewing the business loss limitation and the NOL together for those taxpayers that have the business loss limitation and are affected by it.
Thank you.
Again, that's a lot to chew on, but I'll stop there.
Thank you. Committee, I would like to move to public testimony now, if that's all right with you. We have a number of people who are waiting to speak. Good. We are in a public hearing on House Bill 2839. I have a number of people we're expecting to speak now. We will start with any legislators who are in the room with us now. Representative Pham, would you like to start?
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Reschke, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Khan Pham, and I'm the representative for Oregon House District 46. I'm honored to testify today as the chief sponsor for House Bill 2839, a bill to disconnect Oregon from the federal CARES Act tax breaks. My HD 46 predecessor, Representative Alyssa Kane-Geyer, brought up disconnecting from the CARES Act tax breaks for consideration in the last few special sessions, but it was not moved to the floor for a vote. Now that we are in the long session, I hope that we can move this bill forward before Oregon experiences a critical drop in revenues as a result of these tax breaks. As we've discussed before, Oregon's revenue system is a way for us to choose our way as a state, to choose what we want to encourage or discourage, and what our priorities are as a state. However, right now, whenever Congress creates new tax breaks for the rich and for corporations, Oregon often copies the same wasteful subsidies. This is because Oregon automatically, as we've discussed, connects to our federal tax law. And these tax breaks for the wealthy and for corporations drain resources from Oregon schools and essential services. The only way to stop these new tax breaks is for the Oregon legislature to vote to disconnect from them. We could better spend our revenue to help more people not just recover, but thrive in a new economy that is more just and more equitable. HB 2839 would disconnect Oregon from some of the worst designed provisions of the Federal CARES Act. Oregon has a choice to stop the state from duplicating these three costly tax breaks: business loss limitation, net operating loss expansion, and business interest deductions. Together, these tax breaks will pull in more than $110 million combined out of our current biennium and the next biennium budget. The most egregious of these policies repeals the limit on how much certain pass-through businesses can offset business losses against non-business income, such as salary or investment income. This particular provision only benefits a tiny sliver of Oregon taxpayers, the vast majority of whom make more than $1 million per year. These millionaires will collect 9 out of every $10 of the tax break. Too much of the CARES Act will go to businesses who are doing just fine or even better under COVID conditions. Even with this proposed bill fix, these millionaires will still receive these benefits on their federal taxes. Disconnecting can result in greater investment in our local COVID response and recovery, in housing, in education, in mental health, wildfire recovery, and longstanding needs to address racial inequalities in our communities. The Oregon legislature never vetted these tax breaks that mainly benefit the well-off, but now we have the opportunity today. I urge this committee to consider the merits of HB 2839 and support Oregon disconnecting from these portions of the Federal CARES Act. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Is Senator Golden in the room with us?
Yes, Madam Chair, I am.
Go ahead.
Well, thank you. Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Reschke, and Vice Chair Pham, I especially appreciate the chance to come before your committee in support of the House Bill 2839. My name is Jeff Golden. I represent Senate District 3 in the Rogue Valley. And my enthusiasm for being here comes from my belief that this bill could offer the vanishingly rare opportunity to come together across party lines if we sidestep the clutter of misinformation that's landing in our inboxes. Some of my mail these days says, "What is wrong with you? You're considering raising taxes on businesses that have been hit so hard by COVID," which is exactly the opposite of what supporters of this bill want to do. So instead of lining up for a simplistic and predictable battle, I think we could actually come to agreement on this bill if my assumption is right, and that assumption is this. We're all agreed that some Oregon businesses have definitely been hammered by COVID, are struggling hard to keep their doors open, and we want to help them survive. If we are agreed on that, then the first question we have to ask is, how well targeted are the new federal tax breaks, the ones we'd be disconnecting from here, and the breaks in the December federal package, not part of this bill, but deserving a conversation? How well targeted are they for relieving COVID's economic wreckage? You've already heard some good analysis on that. I believe more is forthcoming, but the answer is already clear. The targeting, to be generous, is lousy. Now, it might be that in this debate you hear or read someone say that none of these tax breaks will help a single business hurt by COVID. If you do, you are hearing serious and simplistic exaggeration. But the evidence is clearer and clearer that there's no steady correlation between COVID-damaged businesses and the beneficiaries of these CARES tax breaks. Meanwhile, at the same time, we all know businesses that are suffering, hanging on by their fingernails throughout this past year, who have no way to access the tax breaks the Feds passed. All of us have some in our district, and it's heartbreaking. A light bulb on all this clicked for me a couple months ago in a Zoom call with other members. At one point, a couple of Republican legislators talked about their deep concern over whether family-owned restaurants in their district would survive the COVID recession, and how critically they needed more help. They added that a big chain restaurants in their districts that were likely receiving some form of government relief seemed like they were thriving, business as usual or even better, but where's the help for the little guy? Our call was ending, so I didn't get a chance to say what I was thinking, which was that we can do something about that. What if Oregon says no to federal tax breaks that'll benefit those corporate chains and their top executives and move that saved revenue over to those small businesses whose doors you don't want to see closing? That's the purpose of this disconnection, and it's exactly why several states, some with Republican majority legislatures, have already disconnected. To make sure that happens, we could add language to the bill that ensures that much of the revenue saved through disconnection is allocated to business relief loans and grants based on COVID or wildfire disaster related need, a program crafted by Oregonians with a stake in seeing our businesses survive, not by K Street lobbyists. So to conclude, Madam Chair, my request to the committee and to all of our colleagues is pretty simple. Look at the unfolding analysis on these federal tax breaks, and if you conclude, as I firmly think you will, that they're not well targeted to COVID-damaged businesses, let's unhook from that program to fund an Oregon program that hits the right targets. As a bonus, it'd be fun to mess with the conventional wisdom that Democrats and Republicans can never agree on tax measures. We're at a moment when Oregonians really need us to shake loose from simplistic, knee-jerk, possibly outdated ideas about which party's locked into what position, to pay close attention to the current realities, and to get the help where it's needed. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I actually really, really appreciate the comments of the senator as a person that works with many small business owners throughout Eastern Oregon. His message is there's some accuracy there in that there's some real winners out there as a result of federal tax policy, federal incentives, and there's others who are not. And so based on those comments, I'm going to take a much deeper look at this piece of legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's move now to another legislator who has signed up. Is Senator Dembro with us?
I am, Chair Nathanson. Thank you. I can't believe the stars aligned and I can actually be with you. But for the record, everyone, I'm Michael Dembro. I am the senator from District 23. That's much of Northeast and Southeast Portland and Park Rose, Maywood Park. And I'm very happy to be here to support the comments that Rep. Pham and Senator Golden made. You know, I think Rep. Pham provided a really good analysis of the problem, and Senator Golden added to that and I think gave some good proposals for how really we should be going about this. You know, like many of you, I'm sure, I've been hearing from a lot of small business owners throughout this pandemic about the devastation that the pandemic has caused for them. And, you know, the measures that we've had to take to keep people safe and just all the other effects of COVID and then subsequently wildfire. And I will say, you know, I'm proud of this legislature for having stepped up, really, I think, ahead of a number of other states in taking steps to support our small businesses during this pandemic. You know, the federal government did as well with the CARES Act. And, you know, they created the PPP program, which I think we all know was well-intentioned, but, you know, had problems as well. And we as a state stepped in and, you know, helped to fill the gaps that program created. You know, among the efforts that Congress took to address the economic fallout of the pandemic, you know, was the set of tax breaks that are before you today, that are under discussion here. And, you know, I will say that, you know, as we all know, Congress has the benefit of not having to worry about a balanced budget, unlike us. And so, you know, you all know, you folks know more than all of us that, you know, just what a tax expenditure means. It's a decision that, you know, we are going to invest in this tax break, this tax credit, as opposed to something else. And that's why, you know, the legislature, I think, in its wisdom, whenever it was that we created that sunset provision for tax breaks, you know, where periodically we look at all our tax breaks and decide, is this something I want to invest in? You know, because we as states don't have that luxury that the feds do. For us, one tax break means that there's less to invest in other necessary services. And in this case, you know, just supporting what Senator Golden was saying, it really is the small businesses that need support that are being hammered by this pandemic, where I think we really need to be focusing our resources. So, you know, I would just simply ask you, and I think it really is incumbent on all of us to ask ourselves this question. Would we be creating these tax breaks at this point? If it were, you know, if it were our decision to create a new program, you know, where we're looking at all the priorities of where support is needed most at this time, is this where we would this be a priority for this legislature? Because in the midst of a pandemic, we need to be talking about priorities. And so I would ask you that. You know, I'd ask you the further question of, you know, if this break, you know, if these tax breaks were in place, had been in place for six years, would you today be voting to renew them? And if the answer to either of those is no, then I think you really need to look very seriously at disconnecting and dedicating these resources to where the dollars should go, which, you know, I would argue are our Main Street small businesses that are really in need of support. So thank you very much for giving me the time, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Pham and Reschke, and happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you. Representative Smith, do you have a question?
Nope, I'm sorry, bad hand management, sir.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to hear from Representative Ruiz.
Good afternoon, everybody. Seems that my camera's not working and I'm bummed out because I have a really nice suit on for all of you, but we'll make it work. Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Reschke and Pham, and members of the House Revenue Committee. For the record, my name is Ricky Ruiz, and I'm the representative of House District 50, which encompasses Gresham, East Portland, and the indigenous lands of Chinook and Cowlitz. I am honored to have to be one of the first testimony in support of House Bill 2839 and fully support what my colleagues have mentioned, both senators and Representative Pham. Just to share a little bit about this bill, you know, this legislation would disconnect Oregon from some of the worst design provisions of the Federal CARES Act. It would stop the state from duplicating wasteful, inequitable tax breaks that would further inequality at a time when Oregonians across the state are asking for better and taking to the streets to demand racial justice. These calls must extend to our inequitable tax systems as well. Oregon should pursue policies that reduce racial disparities rather than policies that exacerbate them. Due to discriminatory policy choices past and present, white Oregonians are most likely to be high income than Oregonians of color, and many barriers continue to exist for Black, Indigenous, and people of color to own their own business, accumulate wealth, or to be able to withstand hardships like a global pandemic. And while the pandemic has harmed all Oregonians of color have died more, been vaccinated more slowly, and lost jobs at a higher rate. When we look at who benefits from the state giving tax breaks, it is certainly not communities of color who have suffered disproportionately in this recession. These tax breaks fail to test of helping those who need it the most, and they perpetuate inequality. we have an opportunity to do better. This choice is, to me, is simple. At a time when the state revenue is in short supply and essential services are considered for cuts, the legislature can either give tens of millions in tax breaks that mostly help small group of rich, disproportionately white Oregonians, or lawmakers can connect and use these resources to help the Oregonians in the greatest needs. For example, we could fund services that I know as a committee member to both the House Education and Human Services Committees. It's really, you know, both of them are very underfunded during this pandemic. Supports like mental health is highly needed for our loved ones and neighbors. I urge this committee to support House Bill 2839 and support Oregon disconnecting from these portions of the CARES Act. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Graber is with us also. Are you here?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Reschke, Vice Chair Pham, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dacia Graber, and I am the representative for House District 35, covering Tigard and Southwest Portland. I'm thankful to testify in support of House Bill 2839, a bill to disconnect Oregon from CARES Act tax breaks. We need to prioritize Oregon's recovery. As a firefighter and paramedic, it is my job to assess and triage emergency situations, gather the necessary resources to address the problem, and execute the plan so that my team and I can save lives. As state representatives, I see no difference in the challenge our legislature has been tasked with in addressing Oregon's recovery from the pandemic and wildfires. The emergency is clear. People are dying, students are struggling, small businesses are shuttering, and BIPOC and frontline communities are suffering at disproportionately higher rates. In order for us to protect and serve Oregonians, we need reliable funding to access the resources needed to address these statewide issues. As we face potentially record low state revenue, we must prioritize Oregon's recovery and disconnect from the CARES Act tax breaks, which excessively benefit the very highest earners and big businesses. As these three tax breaks currently stand, we're set to lose more than $102 million during the next biennium, money that is desperately needed to support life and small business saving COVID recovery in our communities. By disconnecting from these misdirected tax breaks, we can invest more in important services that help the Oregonians in greatest need, and we can have an Oregon-centered voice in doing so. The pandemic and wildfires have only exacerbated existing racial, geographic, and socioeconomic disparities in Oregon's healthcare, housing, and education. We cannot afford to lose these funds while these communities require immediate support and attention. This revenue comes from our top 1% of earners and should be used to support our small businesses and working families in the form of grants, paycheck payment programs, and unemployment insurance. When we allow the state's largest corporations a loophole from paying their fair share, it becomes harder to help our small business, localized economy, and families build back from a truly devastating past year. I urge this committee to consider the merits of House Bill 2839 and support Oregon disconnecting from these portions of the CARES Act. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. That's all of the legislators I see in the virtual hearing room with us. I'd like to move to public testimony now from members of the public who have signed up to testify. I want to thank the members of the legislature who, many of whom limited your remarks to under 3 minutes to allow ample time for public testimony. So thank you very much. We should have adequate time to hear from everybody who has signed up to speak this afternoon. I have 9 more names on the list. And if everyone takes around 3 minutes or so, we do have plenty of time to get through the list today. The first three, I'm going to call on you so you have an idea of who's coming up and who's next. The first three will be Daniel Hauser, Amy Wong, Courtney Graham. After that, we will hear from Scott Roon, Sean Cleave, and Anthony Smith. And then there are several names after that. So let's start first. I'm going to set the timer, ask staff to start the timer at 3 minutes each to give us an idea, so you'll see how we're doing on time. Daniel Hauser, and after you, Amy Wong and Courtney Graham.
Well, I can't see the timer, which is, will make this fun, so I will just shoot for 3 minutes, and I imagine someone will yell at me if I go over. Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Pham, Vice Chair Reschke, and members of the committee. My name is Daniel Hauser, Tax Policy Analyst for the Oregon Center for Public Policy, and I respectfully submit this testimony in support of House Bill 2839. This legislation would disconnect Oregon from some of the worst design provisions, as you've heard before, of the Federal CARES Act. And while Oregon business owners will still receive this federal benefit, Oregon should disconnect and stop the state from duplicating these wasteful, inequitable tax breaks. Tax provisions in the CARES Act fail to focus the help on businesses in real need, right? There's no requirement that a business have any lost revenue or have been harmed by restrictions responding to the pandemic to benefit. An investment firm, for example, that has seen its profits rise during the pandemic and is riding, let's say, was shorting GameStop or some other stock, can still reap benefits from these tax breaks if they're able to. Looking at just one of the tax breaks, the business loss limitation, we see exactly who benefits from this policy. Oregon taxpayers who are making more than $1 million each year will collect $9 out of every $10 from the subsidy. And I know there were some questions around figures earlier on, and those were figures that were provided by the Legislative Revenue Office a few months ago. And so we certainly look forward to seeing updated figures. But those folks, millionaires in Oregon, they really reside within Oregon's richest 1% of taxpayers. These are not the people that are in such desperate need of support. And that's looking just at the business loss limitation. When we think about the businesses and the Oregonians that are in the greatest need of support, right? These are the folks we heard about earlier that are struggling to survive, that are struggling to afford care for their children, struggling to stay housed in this pandemic. And Oregon can use that $84 million in revenue loss to these tax breaks in just the current budget period to help the Oregonians in greatest need, rather than spending those dollars on a blanket tax break available to any business owners that qualify. Lawmakers should also, as Rep. Ruiz and others have noted, really consider carefully the tax policy implications of this policy. Because of racist and discriminatory policy choices, both past and present, white Oregonians are more likely to be high income than Oregonians of color. They're more likely to own a business. And so while the pandemic has harmed all of us, Oregonians of color have also suffered disproportionately. With state revenue in short supply, the legislature can leave these $84 million in tax breaks for our current budget period alone and allow them to continue flowing out disproportionately to high-income white Oregonians. Or we can disconnect and we can use these resources to help the Oregonians in the greatest need, a group overrepresented by our communities of color. House Bill 2839 frees up resources to make meaningful investments, and I urge you to support House Bill 2839. And if that clinking sound was the bell and it wasn't someone drinking water, I apologize. I heard it repeatedly, and so I was like, okay, this is a strange sound. So my apologies if I went over.
You're fine on time. And in fact, if you had 15 or 20 seconds more that you cut off, you can finish your thought.
Well, I will just add then, taking full advantage of that, that there's been some claims around timing, that this is only a function of timing. And I think it's really important to realize that every single net operating loss that's created is not used, right? It is not a zero-sum game where every loss ever created is always ends up in reduced, you know, revenues to the state. And I would certainly hope that we can have further conversation around which share of those net operating losses will be used and how long will it take, right? I think that's part of this as well. We really need to be careful and thoughtful around the cash flow and the timing pieces of this bill. So thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Amy Wong.
Hello, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Reschke, Vice Chair Pham, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Amy Wong, Policy Director for Friends of Family Farmers, a farmer-led nonprofit that has advocated for family-scale farmers for over 15 years. Friends of Family Farmers supports HB 2839 because the CARES Act's tax provisions do not help small farmers. Oregonians in the top tax brackets who would benefit from these provisions, including the owners of industrial agriculture operations, have weathered COVID-19 far better than the small farmers and food producers who actually stepped up to feed Oregonians during the pandemic. As COVID-19 spread, the industrial food chain suffered numerous breakdowns, like meat processing plant closures and milk dumping. And these industrial entities, not small farmers, are the ones complaining about the disconnect. The breakdowns highlight the need for a resilient local food system in Oregon that prioritizes helping diversified small farmers in rural communities. Oregon can do this by pursuing the tax disconnect and spreading the wealth. Here are some ways that the disconnect millions could be used to actually help small farmers while also increasing regional food security. One bill is HB 2785, which would appropriate $10 million to ODA to help expand processing capacity for the recently enacted state meat inspection program. Many other states have started these grant funds during COVID-19. The bill will increase rural economic development as well as help the 25% of Oregonians who are currently experiencing food insecurity, as the state meat inspection program makes it easier for producers to donate locally produced meat to food banks. Other ways to shore up ag resiliency include investments in regional infrastructure like value-added facilities, cold storage, and food hubs, as well as funding for programs like Double Up Food Bucks, the Oregon Organic Action Plan, Farm to School, OSU Extension, the Oregon Workers Relief Fund, the Oregon Agricultural Heritage Program, and also growing ag finance programs for beginning and new farmers like the Aggie Bonds. I'd like to say that I agree with what the representatives and senators said previously, as well as Daniel Hauser, and I'm happy to answer questions or to go into depth about any of these programs at any time. And thank you for having me with such a distinguished panel.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Smith, I'm having just a little bit of difficulty on my end as well. Do you have your hand up right now?
I do, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of this committee, while I appreciate much of the comments that were just shared by the most recent panelists, I found other comments to be highly insulting to the citizens of District 57. The citizens in District 57 provide the food that all of us eat. They provide the beef, they provide the dairy, they provide the vegetables of which we all enjoy, and to insinuate that they're pure capitalists with no desire to do the right thing is very insulting. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for sharing your comments. Anything else before we move to the next speaker? Courtney Graham, please.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Pham and Reschke, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Courtney Graham, and I am here on behalf of SEIU in support of House Bill 2839. Which would disconnect Oregon from certain federal tax provisions. For those of you that aren't familiar with SEIU, we're an 85,000 member union in Oregon and Southwest Washington and a 2 million member union nationally. 60% of SEIU Local 503's members earn less than $40,000 a year, and the majority of SEIU 49's members are low-wage workers. Our members are janitors, healthcare workers, care providers, public workers, and more, and they're hardworking folks who have been on the front lines of this crisis for the past year. And there are numerous crises that our state is grappling with as we enter 2021. I think we're all aware of the significant impacts COVID-19 has had on our economy, resulting in job losses, losses that disproportionately impact women and people of color. This has strained our unemployment system. Small businesses have closed. There have been significant reductions in state revenues, and we have an uncertain path to recovery. And what's more, as has been laid out, a legacy of racist and discriminatory policies has meant that the impacts of these crises have not been felt equally. It's SEIU's position that the legislature can't balance the budget on the backs of these workers, small businesses, and families and communities who have been most impacted, while allowing a tax benefit like this to accrue to a small minority of folks. Instead, Oregonians need support, both to survive in the long term through this crisis, or in the short term through this crisis as we grapple with COVID-19, but also to recover and rebuild in the long term. And one way to expand Oregon's capacity to provide this support, as many people have already said, is to pass the bill under consideration today, because disconnecting from three of the most poorly targeted provisions of the CARES Act, the business loss limitation, net operating loss expansion, and business interest deductions, would result in additional millions of dollars in critical resources for the state's budget at a time of fiscal challenge. particularly because these tax breaks have benefited a small group of mostly white wealthy individuals, not the vast majority of Oregonians. We think the choice is clear, invest in Oregonians. And rather than spending these valuable state tax dollars on these tax breaks, the legislature has an opportunity to take bold, decisive action to dedicate significant resources to programs and initiatives that meet the needs of Oregonians who have been most impacted by the dual economic and public health crises that COVID has caused. And we really urge your support for House Bill 2839. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the testimony. Any questions for the previous three speakers? I'm ready to move to the next group. I'd like to hear from Scott Bruin, followed by Sean Cleave and Anthony Smith.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Scott Bruin, Director of Tax and Fiscal Policy for Oregon Business and Industry. OBI is the state's largest business trade association with over 1,600 members who employ more than 330,000 Oregonians. Respectfully, we strongly oppose House Bill 2839 or any efforts to disconnect from the bipartisan Federal CARES Act and the critical benefits that that act provides for struggling Oregon businesses. Every business in the state of Oregon has been affected by the economic fallout caused by the pandemic. Work has slowed down, work was sidelined, work went away, and sadly, at its worst, many businesses that provide that work have simply had to close and will not be coming back. At the peak of all of this, last year, there were nearly 300,000 Oregonians out of work due to the pandemic, the business slowdowns, and the mandated closures. The business aspects of the CARES Act were passed on a bipartisan basis to help businesses weather this generational economic storm. In the U.S. Senate, where it seems like they can't agree on anything, the CARES Act passed 96-0. The act was designed to help every American business, designed to give American businesses a little bit of time to get back on their feet and to provide the liquidity and flexibility to stay open and keep Americans employed. Part of this means allowing businesses that have losses, especially losses related to COVID, the tax benefit of those losses. By definition, if a business has lost or is losing money, say maybe a restaurant or a gym that was mandated to close, it likely would not have the liquidity or cash to sustain operations and keep people employed. The loss benefits of the CARES Act provide businesses a little additional liquidity and cash to sustain operation. It provides a little time along with other tools like PPP loans for businesses to get back on their feet until this crisis is behind us. House Bill 2839 is a tax increase. And given, as we've reported last fall, that business taxes are already set to rise $1.8 billion by 2022, when tax measures passed in 2019 are fully phased in, we should be very careful. Worse, House Bill 2839 is a tax increase on those very businesses that have struggled the most and have had the hardest time during this crisis. It's a tax increase on businesses that have lost and are losing money, including those gyms and restaurants which were mandated to close and forced to lose money out of public safety and health concerns. Let me conclude by asking a question. How many? How many struggling businesses would this tax increase affect? We know that in a normal year, there are between 15 to 20,000 filers who file a net operating loss, but this is anything but a normal year. In a year that may be the worst since the Great Depression, how many will have lost money? 30,000, 40,000? We don't know, and we won't know until people start filing. However many it is, let's not make it worse for them. Please say no to House Bill 2839. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for the testimony. Next speaker.
Madam Chair, for the record, Sean Cleave, representing the Taxpayers Association of Oregon. And if you can see me, in all of your honor, I have a big stack of red vines to illustrate how much I miss seeing all of you. And I'll do my best to make it through this in my lonely office this session. On behalf of the Taxpayers Association of Oregon, we respectfully object to the policies outlined in House Bill 2839. I'm not going to belabor anything that my colleagues, Mr. Bruin or Mr. Smith, might be able to tell you in more respect to their business members' experience with COVID. I will point out, just for the record, Madam, that there were some good advice that was given from your nonpartisan staff in regard to House Bill 2457 and 2577, which really comes down to a discussion on whether you want to opt in or opt out of various policies passed by the government. Believe it or not, I've been working in the building for over 20 years, and I've seen a variety of changes in that policy. And usually what I find is, despite good intentions, a lot of these policies are chasing a loss. And that's exactly how I would describe House Bill 2839. It's strange to say, but $110 million in estimated revenue can come down to, frankly, a rounding error in our state and federal budgets. That's not to mean that those dollars don't go towards something, but the policy before you is whether or not small businesses in Oregon are in need of those types of provisions passed on from a generally income tax-based federal system of taxation and a generally income-based tax system in Oregon. I'd like to talk a little bit, if I might, about my youngest brother, who's dealt with some mental health issues over the past 20 years. Fantastic young man, and luckily he was able to be employed at a great business here in Salem that helps to process school photos. Of course, given the pandemic, their business has taken a huge toll, and their ability to branch out in other ways, given the closure of many businesses, has just been non-existent. Unfortunately, at the beginning of the year, he was let off as the business tries to adapt and considers closing permanently. Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is the exact type of business we're talking about. Of course, there will always be outliers, and to the extent that we can ignore the outliers as issues that have no large impact other than our own frustrations, I would recommend that the House Committee on Revenue set aside House Bill 2839 for this session. And I will add, Madam Chair, if I might, I know I'm a little over, the same bill came up in an amendment to Senate Bill 137 last week in the Senate Committee on Revenue and Finance. And there was a request that there be a dynamic analysis made by staff regarding a projection on how many additional business closures and how many additional layoffs might be a result of disconnecting from the CARES Act in this way. And I think that information would be great to share with both sides of our assembly. And with that, thank you, Madam and committee members. I'm open for any questions you may have.
Thank you. I'd like to hear from one more before I ask for questions from the three of you. Mr. Smith.
Chair Nathanson, vice chairs, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Anthony Smith. I'm the Oregon State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business, representing thousands of small businesses across the state, many being the smallest of small businesses, with about 90% of our members in Oregon having fewer than 25 employees and 70% having fewer than 10 employees. Madam Chair, I appear before you today in opposition to House Bill 2839, which would disconnect Oregon from several tax relief provisions of the Federal CARES Act. In response to the coronavirus pandemic, the United States Congress recognized the financial hardships families and businesses have experienced because of sudden job losses and business closures by passing the CARES Act with overwhelming bipartisan support. Among other provisions, the CARES Act authorized economic impact payments, otherwise known as stimulus checks, for individuals, and made significant reforms to the federal tax code to provide tax relief to businesses. Both policies sought to address the core problem of reduced cash flow and liquidity. As the committee is aware, normally Oregon automatically connects to the federal tax code. This bill would change that standard practice, making Oregon businesses ineligible for state-level tax relief that would otherwise flow their way. The bill would divert much needed cash from the pockets of struggling Oregon small businesses to state coffers, making it harder for small businesses to keep their doors open and put unemployed Oregonians back to work. HB 2839 would disconnect Oregon from three parts of the CARES Act, the three provisions that staff introduced for you. The combined effects of these key features of the CARES Act allow for the immediate monetization of business losses rather than having to carry forward those losses to future tax years, and allows for increased deduction for interest paid, recognizing that many businesses are having to borrow in order to ride out the pandemic. The primary purpose of these provisions is to address liquidity in a time when most businesses are experiencing challenging cash flow issues. Two of the three provisions have received quite a lot of attention from proponents in testimony today, as well as in some recent media coverage. But the significance of the net operating loss provision has been downplayed somewhat. This provision has no income threshold tied to it, and it only benefits those businesses that have suffered losses. If the state truly wants to provide targeted relief to the businesses that need it most, this provision does exactly that and has the potential to provide immediate liquidity to thousands of struggling small business owners, especially important for those with low to moderate levels of income and a lack of cash reserves. If House Bill 2839 becomes law, the state would deny much-needed tax relief to thousands of Oregon businesses, totaling $83.9 million in the current biennium and $32.6 million for the 21-23 biennium, based on the best available figures that I've seen produced by LRO to date. By the 23-25 biennium, this policy would negatively impact the state budget by $25.4 million. With the future of the economic recovery still largely unknown, this could exacerbate future budget holes, while it is still unclear whether the state will need to fill a budget hole for the 21-23 biennium, as talks of a relief package for the states continue between the Biden administration and the new Congress. By passing House Bill 2839, the state would be prioritizing its own possible budget needs over the immediate cash flow needs of Oregon businesses and the jobs that those businesses provide to working Oregonians. These businesses have been asked to play a critical role in stopping the spread of COVID-19. Many were required to shutter their doors. More have seen a drastic drop in sales, and nearly every business is now required to enforce public health and safety mandates. All of these factors have had a significant financial impact on Oregon's small businesses, and the last thing any of them need right now is a higher tax bill. NFIB respectfully asks that you protect Oregon businesses and the jobs Oregonians depend on by opposing House Bill 2839. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Committee, are there questions for any of these three panelists? And after this, we have three more people signed up to testify, just so you're aware of our timing here. Representative Marsh, you have a question?
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I do, for Mr. Smith. I'm really just trying to understand who is impacted by these various provisions. And I was interested in the net operating loss carryback you noticed being particularly important. And I'm trying to get a sense of, again, how broad the impact is. I'm just sitting here looking at websites to try to figure out how many small businesses there are in the state. What's the number you normally use? That's question number one.
Yeah, Chair Nathanson, Representative Marsh, I think that it kind of goes to the definition of what a small business is, and there's lots of different definitions out there. Certainly hundreds of thousands of small businesses, depending on how you count. I think the U.S. Small Business Administration puts the number upwards of 400,000 in the state. Again, it depends, and that's their definition is under 500 employees. Our members are overwhelmingly below 70% of them have fewer than 10 employees, and 90% of them have fewer than 25 employees.
Rep. Nathanson, follow up.
Very quick, because I do want to make sure we get to the other three speakers.
Okay. Thank you. And that's 350,000 is roughly what I was coming up with on the web. The December analysis from staff, and they recognize that they are fully acknowledging up front that that conditions have changed, suggested that 2,700 taxpayers would use the NOL. That, if we're looking at 350,000 small businesses, that does not seem significant to me. And I would love your feedback, although I recognize we are short of time, so that might be an emailed response.
Madam Chair, if I might respond just for a moment.
Sure.
So we had seen some initial numbers. I think my colleague Scott Bruin with OBI referenced that between 15 and 20,000 taxpayers in an average year, in a normal year, file a net operating loss. You know, we know that number is going to be bigger in the year 2020. And I guess I would defer to LRO staff to come up with the numbers or to justify the numbers that were in that December 10th document. But my interpretation of that was that, yeah, the universe might be tens of thousands of businesses experiencing net operating losses. But it's hard to say how many will actually go back and do a carryback or you know, some of them might want to continue or to carry forward those losses for future years. Our position would be that an individual taxpayer might want to carry forward, or they might want to take advantage of this carryback provision. But we would want our business owners who know their financial situations in consultation with their financial advisors and their CPAs to be in a position to make that choice, because the need for cash right now could be fairly dire for them.
Thank you for that response. I want to remind everyone that we can accept written testimony, which could be something you didn't get to say or a response to something that you've heard come up here. We can accept written testimony for 24 hours after the meeting started today. So something comes up this afternoon, tonight, tomorrow morning, please feel free to send it in. We're going to move to the next speakers now. Lamar Wise is the first, followed by Bennett Minton and Laurie Wimmer. And Mr. Wise, you didn't add an organization that you're representing. It just says OR for the state of Oregon. So please include that when you introduce yourself.
I'll do that. I think that was just auto-population from Google, so apologies. But Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, my name is Lamar Wise. I'm a political coordinator with AFSCME Council 75, and I'm actually testifying in favor of House Bill 2839. AFSCME Council 75 represents about 27,000 workers across the state. Our members have felt the economic impacts of the wildfires and the COVID-19 virus. Many have had to depend on the state for federal aid to make ends meet. State workers, county workers, and service providers are grappling with our new reality, and it's clear that that the Oregonians that they serve also need vital assistance from the state. In order for us to respond to the moment, we need access to as many resources as possible. This is why AFSCME supports disconnecting from federal tax cuts, federal tax breaks. It is essential that we protect our state and local jobs and find the necessary resources to support critical services that we provide to Oregonians. With the estimated $84 million that could be salvaged from this bill, it would allow the legislature the opportunity to invest in the much needed recovery services that is essential for the state to be whole moving forward. We also can't overstate that this is not a tax increase on businesses. Our goal is to close a dangerous loophole that would prevent businesses from double dipping in terms of receiving CARES benefits. And we fear not taking action now would put added pressure on the state to make devastating cuts that could compromise our ability to recover quickly. Working families need to be prioritized as we balance our budget, and this much needed support is essential in order for us to make a more equitable tax code. And with that, I thank you for consideration, and I'll submit the rest of my testimony online. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Bennett Minton.
a reminder to Bennett might be on the phone, star six to unmute.
I
can hear someone now.
Hello, am I there?
I hear you.
Ah, great. Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Bennett Minton, speaking on behalf of Tax Fairness Oregon, a network of volunteers who advocate for a rational and equitable tax code. We support the bill. We became alarmed about these CARES Act provisions in the spring, both their cost and their distribution to the wealthiest Americans, which the Joint Committee on Taxation confirmed in April. As you know, LRO has reduced its estimate of the cost of these provisions, but our concerns remain. They misallocate limited resources and they threaten the general fund. I was a tax policy analyst in DC for three decades, and I watched the deal-making in the Senate Finance Committee, which produced this one. Proponents of these benefits say the CARES Act was bipartisan. As you know, legislation is compromised. Ranking Democrat Wyden championed greater unemployment benefits, and Republicans insisted on the suspension of these limits imposed in 2017. My written statement has brief summaries of them, including one I lobbied on. My three points apply to all of them. One, these provisions provide timing shifts in tax payments, but some revenue will leak. That is, affected taxpayers will never owe it because of changes in their circumstances or in the law. Two, the affected taxpayers are overwhelmingly prosperous. And three, many Main Street businesses may be eligible for refunds on amended returns, but for most, the amount is so low that it isn't worth their accountant's time. Why did Congress do this? JCT wrote, to enhance liquidity. But these benefits are difficult to monetize. A taxpayer who filed an amended return would wait months for a refund. For 2020, a business may count on a tax reduction over the course of the year if it projected any liability at all. But for businesses losing money in the COVID contraction and therefore without liability, these provisions are unlikely to result in cash. Here's my explanation for these provisions. The lobbyists who won big tax cuts in 2017 remained at the doors of the Finance Committee, looking to be relieved of these minor limits. Finance members like giving away money, but their method is the abstract tax code, not cash. And businesses that pay lots of tax hire tax lobbyists to hang around their doors. I was one of them. I think the record reflects that five states have disconnected from these provisions. New York has disconnected through 2021, so it doesn't have to worry about what else Congress does, like provide the PPP double dip, which we hope you'll examine. When you do, you will note that the PPP program has already spent $7 billion in forgivable, untaxed income for Oregon businesses, and that's great. Since Congress acted last March, we have witnessed a recovery that has shifted income upwards but left millions of Americans and many thousands of Oregonians hanging by a thread. One out of seven of our fellow citizens is hungry today. Remaining connected in the face of these urgent needs strikes us as irresponsible. Thank you.
Thank you. And our final speaker.
Yes.
Laurie Wimmer, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and for your committee record. This is Laurie Wimmer representing 41,000 members of the Oregon Education Association, and it's my honor to testify in support of House Bill 2839 today, which would enable Oregon to recover revenue otherwise foregone, as you've heard, due to federal tax law changes. There's a saying that when you're in a hole, stop digging. When it comes to tax policy in Oregon, this admonition is particularly apt. As with previous recessions, OEA believes that a good approach in times of revenue shortfalls, such as that which we're experiencing right now, is to make sure that tax policy doesn't make the state's ability to serve its citizens unnecessarily more difficult. This bill seems to hew to that common sense. Another reason to support disconnecting to recent federal tax cuts is that Oregon should set its own tax policies and not take dictation from Washington, D.C. Federal tax law changes are rightly the purview of Congress, but state tax law changes ought not to be. And that's why, on a policy level, disconnecting makes sense, with the proviso that individual concepts always can be evaluated to extension for Oregon's tax code if they're right for our state, but not adopted en banc. The Legislative Revenue Office tells us that approximately 2,500 to 3,000 personal corporate tax and corporate taxpayers would be affected by updating the rolling reconnect and disconnecting from these federal provisions. And that doesn't mean that these taxpayers are disallowed preferential tax treatment on their federal returns. As you've heard, it only means they wouldn't also get a second bite of the apple on their Oregon return. As Oregon struggles with multiple challenges, the pandemic, economic devastation, reduced revenues, greater needs of its people, wildfires, and the imperatives of a renewed focus on racial justice, legislators have much on their plates as they work to lead us out of crisis to recovery. Now is not the time to unnecessarily produce higher liquidity, as the corporate tax breaks have been characterized, advantaging our most affluent and profitable while cutting services for our most vulnerable. Recovering even small revenues has a direct impact not only on those revenues, but also on the overall fairness of our system. We must consider the revenue impacts of tax giveaways that seem to advantage the few at the expense of the many, and how that translates to services. For example, in the education sphere, $55 million per year would fund 608 teachers or mental health counselors, school nurses, or other education professionals for a full school year. And with districts struggling to prepare our schools for safe in-person reopening, we will need these critical revenues that, without your action, will be lost to those at the top. Thanks so much for considering our thoughts on this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you, everyone, for your testimony. Committee, do you have any questions? We are over time. We're supposed to be done at a quarter till. Do you have any questions before we release these people on the panel that just spoke? Okay. I think we have completed our business for today. Mr. Allenack or Mr. Easton, is there anything else to do before I close the public hearing on 2839?
No, Madam Chair, I do believe you made it through all the witness list and through the agenda as well.
Okay, thank you. I'm closing the public hearing now on House Bill 2839. There is no other business on our agenda for today. Thank you, committee. We're adjourned.